Sunday, July 25th. Marnie Clifford, something like me, can't stand to be a failure. She'd done very badly at bowling. So Sunday morning, I found that she'd been up early at determined practice. Having her here this weekend and that handsome, soothing Clark is one of the real pleasures. A chief ingredient in the mixture of a happy weekend is the feeling that you're giving something special to others. A little before noon, he met John Chancellor and his wife, and Bill Baxter, fresh out of service at St. Mark's, and Jean Baxter at the heliport, and then back to Hickory for church services conducted by Bill and attended by all the guests, including two Jews and a few Catholics. Lucy and Pat had gone to Mass, and all the servicemen on the base who cared to come. I contrasted it with the service of last week, Billy Graham, whom I'm awfully likely to call Billy Sunday. That merely dates me, but he's used to it. In fact, he even said one time, court in New Jersey handed down a decision where an old lady in a will had left a bequest to Billy Sunday, but she really meant Billy Graham and gave him the bequest. But enough of reminiscing. Bill Baxter, in comparison, was quiet, philosophical, probing, a personal example of the uncertainty and confusion that exists among any of the less comfortable of us in search of religion. I always find him very good for me, and gay and delightful as a person. After church, I was at it again with the chancellors and Marnie in the bowling alley. And then I took my camera and strolled around over Camp David to record this day in our life, to the swimming pool with Tony and the Baxters. He was very simpatico with them. Much of the time, he'd been sort of hosting Peter Hurd, who had a short sitting this morning. He's delightful company, and I know this is a strain on all of us, but I'm determined to get a portrait. And every time I pass President Wilson, my determination hardens. We had late lunch on the porch, the Virginia ham Trudy Fowler had cooked. Suddenly it dawned on me I'd better rustle up some chicken or beef for the Goldbergs. Besides, we were a pretty numerous crew. McNamara's, Byes, Clifford's, Goldberg's, Tony and Peter Hurd, staff, chancellors and Baxter's. But Lyndon is in his element, a sizable crowd. He bores in and talks to whomever he wants to, gets information from them, concentrates on whatever set of individuals he needs to learn from or work with at that time, completely unconscious of the presence of a crowd. And I could see him getting the business of the weekend done. At one point, he walked away with Arthur Goldberg. They strolled for about an hour on the golf course, out of earshot, but in view, both earnest, Lyndon frequently with his hands in his pocket, walking, stopping, gesturing, listening intently to each other. The subject, we all knew, must be the UN. Goldberg is a daring, an interesting choice. So far, they have not been the screams from the Arabs that might have been expected. Many of us went to take a little nap, and later Lyndon told me that he had ridden around Camp David with McNamara and Clark Clifford and had taken Tony along, and that Tony seemed to enjoy it very much. Tony had said to me this had been an ambition of his to see Camp David. How glad I am that he's with us. When I woke up, I found Lyndon stretched out on a chaise lounge on the terrace talking to John Chancellor. I curled up quietly beside him. He said to Chancellor, who is going to be the new head of the Voice of America, "We're not getting the American story told. You can just charge it up to me, and let's go on from there. If this winds up bad, and we get in a land war with Asia, there's only one address they will look for, and that is mine." The hard thing is to stay there without getting involved deeper. You cannot be leader of the world without getting involved in unpleasant things. And there's always someone who knows it better. Ted Schultz had the perfect answer for the Dominican Republic. Chancellor spoke up, but he did not have it when it was needed. Lyndon went on to say that there have been 24 major advances last week, and not one got a quarter of an inch. Vietnam got all the space. That story we are not telling adequately to our own country or abroad. In its implications, in its possibilities, Vietnam is certainly a tremendous story, but it does seem to dominate the news out of all proportion, all the things going on, the good constructive things in this country. Lennon spoke of sending McNamara out to Vietnam and how frightened he was every time he went. He said, "I have kept him away from there almost a year now, and I lie awake till he gets back." I look with satisfaction, almost exultation, on these last two appointments, Goldberg to the UN and Chancellor to the USIA. All things lie before us. But up to now, I believe Lyndon's staff and appointments have built toward a greater government. Pretty soon, it was back to bowling again. And then, I asked Lucy if she would take me for a ride in her car with Pat. I didn't know how we would manage it because there are only those two ridiculous bucket seats. But Lucy was enormously pleased. She loves for me to pay her and her beau attention together. She wants him to be a part of the family group. We'd spent an hour or so at the pool talking to Reverend Baxter, which pleased me. Lucy's quite unself-conscious of any possible rift between her and the Episcopal Church because she's become a Catholic. Lucy sat on a pillar in the middle. Pat drove, and we slowly toured the grounds. Outer limits remind you of the sort of place it is. Fences 12 more feet high, topped by a tangled brown mass of barbed wire. They are electrified, I'm sure. This place, of course, has other meanings than a retreat for rest and pleasure for a president. Pat's going into the service, into the Air Force, in October. He's not anxious, but he's not avoiding it. He hopes it'll be 6 months. He knows it may be longer. He's finished Marquette. His family, I gather, are well-to-do people. Very blonde and clean-looking. He seems a fine boy, and Lucy's utterly delighted in his company. It was almost my nicest part of the day. I'm glad I sought it. And tonight, Linda Bird will be home. Whatever the rest of the party does, I want to be under that porte-cochere by 10:30 or so, waiting for this little girl that's been gone 6 weeks, except for coming home for the birthday baptism. A good many of the guests had had to leave earlier, and the rest of us sat down for dinner at 9:30. The McNamaras and Cliffords and Baxters and Chancellors and Birchbys and staff and Lucy and Pat. Lennon would have liked to spend the night, but many of them needed to get in, especially the McNamaras, who always begin their day at 7, and the Birchbys, who had house guests, but who had the most fun of anybody, and how I loved having them. They were marvelous Democratic campaigners last fall, and special favorites of our children. I like to weave in and become close to people who fill those roles, but I think it was my insistence that got us in the helicopter about 10, and home, tired, happy, for a breathless hug and a good long session on the bed with Linda about canoeing, carrying packs in the rain, and the Freemans, she loves them, and newspaper people, she doesn't love them, and all the things that have happened here. Flying in, Clark Clifford made a statement that I remembered.
He said,
"It's been a good weekend for us all. It's been a good weekend for the country." Somehow his tone was so weighted that I felt some pretty important decisions had been arrived at. He didn't elaborate. He's the absolutely cool symbol of discretion. But you can feel the inescapable weight of decisions descending upon you. And you know they must be reached soon.